on the Coyote Sports Network. From Learfield IMG College, this is the YokeCast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics, taking you inside the stories of Coyote athletes, coaches, administrators, and more. Now, here's your host, John Thayer.
Hey, what's up and how you doing? It's another episode of YokeCast. Great to have you alongside for this episode. Certainly appreciate your listenership all year long to these podcasts. Coming up in our show today, we'll talk to freshman golfer Danica Badura, the freshman from Aurora, Nebraska, who is coming off of a top 10 performance here a couple of weeks ago, and will also, of course, be joined by the athletics director at the University of South Dakota. This past weekend, the NCAA tournaments got underway, and the NCAA tournaments for many of us were something that we could celebrate over the course of the past weekend because of what happened last year. And while there was a lot to celebrate, there was a lot to scratch your head about as well, especially when it came to the women's tournament. And over the course of a few days, and really a few hours, there were many different social media posts, many different concerns of inequities that were brought to light. And while some people can look at that and shrug it away, it's a real problem that needs to be addressed and should have been addressed at this point. Like, why are we still dealing with this type of situation in 2021? The issue is that there are many people making decisions, but clearly not thinking things through. The women's basketball teams who made it to the NCAA tournament were told that they were not going to have access to a weight room. And while many of them probably didn't like the idea, they went ahead to the NCAA tournament anyways, because that's what you're going to do, right? And some teams probably prepared themselves to be without a weight room for a couple of days. Then they get to the NCAA tournament site. They find a dumbbell set near a table, which the NCAA has come out and said that was the idea of that was not a workout room or not a weight room, but it was basically something to get loose before practice, I think is what they basically called it. And here's the thing, like, of all years that you're not going to allow access to a weight room or have that set up, why would it be this year? All right, the men's tournament had a weight room, and it was very nice. And, you know, some people will argue, well, the men's tournament brings in more money and blah, blah, blah. That doesn't matter. Okay, at the end of the day, here's what matters. We've got student athletes, whether they are female or male, that work their butts off all year long. Okay, this isn't just a in-season, they're going to lift weights a couple of times. These individuals work hard. And if you don't believe it, look back at some of the photos of some of these athletes that have come into the University of South Dakota or any school and just watch how their bodies have changed over the last couple of years. They do it because it's in their best interest to have a chance to have success, right? To be strong athletes that can handle anything. And we buy tickets, and we watch and we listen to their events all year long, and we support them. And then we get to the NCAA tournament where, by the way, they're locked into isolation upon arrival for a day or 2 days or whatever it was. And they're in this bubble for a couple of days leading up to their first game. And we're not going to have a weight room set up for these women athletes to get their bodies right before they go on the biggest stage of the entire season. This was an absolute massive oversight. I don't know if it was an oversight. I don't know if it was a lack of communication, but this was bad. In a time where inequities, all right, are at the forefront of our conversations in everything, the NCAA messes this up. I mean, there are things you can mess up. This is not one of them. And somebody really, like, I don't know, is it a committee that didn't communicate? Did they not think about it? When they typed out in their notes to these teams, you're not going to have access to a weight room, did they not communicate and see if the men's tournament was going to have a weight room? Because even if they didn't think these student athletes needed it, which they do. But even if they didn't think it, don't you think that optics, and I'm tired of that word, by the way, optics, but the reality is, how did nobody come up with the idea that it was going to look poorly to offer the men's tournament these amenities and not allow the women's tournament these same amenities? There was concerns about the swag bags that the student athletes received, and I think there was a quote about the dollar amount that goes into those bags, and the dollar amount was the same, maybe not the number of items, whatever. But you just, the NCAA missed big on this. And you got to applaud, I think, my opinion, applaud the effort of the student athletes who recognized there was a problem and who put it on blast, who used their platform that is at their fingertips, and they announced to the world, we've got an issue, we aren't where we thought we were. And then the NCAA responded. But it's time for the NCAA to be proactive and less reactionary, because they react to everything. Be proactive. This should have never been a thing from day one. And we have to get through this. We have to get to a point where these concerns, they're not concerns because the issues don't exist. This was a big miss by the NCAA. And they need to wear this one. Somebody needs to be held accountable, and you can't do it going forward. Figure it out. This is an odd year for everyone, right? We've talked about that so many different times. But in a year, especially where you're going to lock these student athletes into one area, into a bubble, and they can't leave their rooms for anything but to go to practice or games, maybe some film study. Right? They're locked into these hotels. And you're not going to give them the opportunity to work out. For a lot of people, that is what gets you through the day, right? That is what keeps you going. Big miss by the NCAA. And I hope that we don't have to hear these stories again. Because this needs to be fixed. These women athletes, they compete just as hard as male athletes. Female athletes bring in revenue at universities because fans want to watch, fans want to listen, fans want to be in attendance. They bring in revenue at a lot of places. They deserved better, and hopefully going forward, they will get better. Exactly what they deserve. Coming up in the show, we'll talk to Danica Badura, a freshman golfer from Aurora, Nebraska. But we start our show with the athletics director at the University of South Dakota, David Herbster. David, we continue through the year, and obviously the women's basketball season, unfortunately, is wrapped up for USD, but obviously a successful season to the NCAA tournament. I know that you made your way to San Antonio. How was your trip? How was your experience with an NCAA tournament that I guess we could say is a little bit different this year?
Yeah, a little bit different is the key. You know, I chose not to go into the bubble with them. And really that was, would have been there probably what flown in on Tuesday, then you're in the bubble and you really don't get out of the bubble. You get to go out for, practice and games, and that's about it. So I went in on Sunday, easy in, game on Monday, and then ended up having to change plans and came back on Tuesday. But, so travel wise, no problem getting to San Antonio, but the experience was interesting because, you know, we were playing in the Alamo Dome, and we probably had at least three times as many fans there as Oregon did. Interesting place because they cordoned off that. They basically divided the Alamo Dome in two, and I think they had courts on both sides, and it was playing in a warehouse with nobody in there. It was weird. It's just my sense and my feelings that the Alamo Dome was already secured, so they had to at least play some games in there. But if you're going to allow so few fans in there, don't put them in, there were probably 25 to 30,000 seats where they could have sat, and you had 300 people in there. So it just felt very, very sterile in there, I guess is the right word. But again, overall, it's the NCAA tournament. You have that anticipation. You have that excitement. You're there. You made the show. You made the dance. That's kind of what you wanted to do. And, you know, I know the game didn't turn out. The game didn't turn out like we wanted to. I mean, that first half, you'd like to get back. But what really impressed me about this team is, you know, we gave up 34 points in the first quarter, but we only gave up 9 in the second quarter. So defensively, we started to figure some things. You know, we figured things out and we settled in a little bit, right? And then second half, between making the adjustments, you know, you outplay them and you outscore them in the second half. But we had too big of a hole to, you know, to kind of get out of. But I think the resiliency and the resolve of this team was unbelievable to turn it around and shake off that first half and come back in the second half and just start throwing punches at them. Metaphorical punches, by the way, but indicative of, you know, this season. I mean, this team and all these teams have had to go through some, between the different protocols and not playing in front of fans, and things are weird, games getting canceled, just a herky-jerky season, really. So why should the NCAA tournament be any different than that, right? But anyway, disappointing. You know, the losing is disappointing, but the fight of this team and what the coaching staff did to get them prepared, what Don did to all season long to get them to this point was a monumental feat, and you have to give a lot of credit certainly to the team, the staff, but the trainers and our strength and conditioning people and sports information and ticketing and marketing, everybody that kind of, because everything was so different, you were kind of writing the playbook as you went along. So overall, so proud of this team for getting there.
Yeah, no doubt they really battled, and even through all the challenges, they continued to battle. And I know Ohio fans appreciated seeing their effort to the very end. This tournament brought to light a lot of concerns in regards to inequities between the men's tournament and the way the women's tournament is handled. And there were concerns about the swag bags that the athletes received for being in the tournament. There were concerns about, obviously, the weight room setup that was in San Antonio versus what was in Indianapolis. What was your reaction to the way that the way everything was handled, I guess, and even getting to the point where we had to have those concerns brought to light?
Unbelievably disappointed, almost disgusted. I mean, I'm a father of three daughters, right? And I thought we had come so far in removing the inequities between men's and women's sports. Obviously not far enough. Here's what you have. You have two different organizing committees in two different cities, and you have two different basketball committees that are overseeing those championships. They obviously are not communicating. And we knew going into this tournament that we were not going to have access to a weight room for the first two rounds. Okay. What we didn't realize is that the men were going to have access to a weight room for the first two rounds. And their idea of a weight room to start off with was that little pathetic dumbbell rack. It just honestly blew my mind. You know, to me, the expectation by the NCAA, and certainly now by those of us in administration that have been in this long enough, is more of equality. And you look to the NCAA to carry that banner, and they're the umbrella that we kind of work under, right? So they're supposed to be the leaders in this. So to me, it was an unbelievable breakdown in communication and in expectations. You know, the men's basketball committee, you know, they are used to managing every aspect of that tournament, first round all the way to the championship game, because it's all on, you know, bid hosted sites. Regardless, it's in San Jose, it's in New Mexico, or it's in Omaha, it's in wherever it is. The first two rounds are always somewhere. They have that committee has a bigger staff because that's how they manage that. And the women's championship committee right now is the first two rounds, really the first four rounds, are typically on college campuses, and you know, colleges host those tournaments on campus. So you have the staff there to manage all that. So again, the coordination and communication, they got to do better. I mean, because that was, frankly, embarrassing. And they're the ones that are supposed to be the champion of equality for us.
You know, one thing that I was thinking during this entire process is people can comment one way or the other, but social media really brought this to light, and it brought change. And it was because student-athletes chose to use platforms that they have access to. it seems like that is the way to continue trying to make change and continue our efforts to have these inequities changed and to have things set in a more fair standard.
Yeah, you know, my hope is that we can change things in a way where we don't have to use social media to do it. Because you can say things on social media that aren't true. You can say things on social media that only give you partial truth and part of the story, right? My hope is that we can get to the point where we don't have to use social media, you know, to enact change, that we've already had enough foresight and thought to make sure that those things like this specific instance, that shouldn't have even been an issue for social media. But we're in a different age and a different time today, and social media in some cases is the only way to have your voice heard. When, you know, had this been expressed just to the basketball organizing committee and the outrage just to the committee and the public didn't know about it, I'm not so sure anything gets done about it, or I'm not sure how fast anything gets done about it.
You know, and I think we can appreciate the efforts to change and understand some of this a little bit more than maybe some places, because women's basketball in the state of South Dakota and at the University of South Dakota is supported at an extremely high level.
It is, and I think we've really worked hard to make sure that we support all of our programs. We provide opportunities for all of our teams. You know, there's going to be differences in between teams, right, just based on the nature of the sport and the things needed for that sport. But, you know, it's access to a weight room. It's access to trainers. I mean, I look at all those things, and we've worked really hard to support our women's sports like we do our men's sports. So then to turn around and to see this, and you know, this is your charter organization, the NCAA, that you kind of report to. They're the ones that, you know, have all the people in compliance and hold us accountable and make us turn in hundreds and hundreds of forms every year. You know, and then as this pops up, you know, I would tell you this, John, I don't know the how and the why this happened. Was this a mistake? Was this an oversight? Was this forethought? That's the part I don't know. And the NCAA hasn't given us any answers on that, because I think we all want to know, how did this happen? How in today's day and age did we get to this? And I'm not sure if they could tell us anything that would really make us feel better.
100%. Yeah, I think a lot of people have stood up, and there have been statements made by coaches. It's been a fascinating thing, and hopefully the things like this don't happen again, and we can continue to move in a positive direction. Let's get to Ask the AD. We've got a bunch of questions and some good ones. All are good ones, of course. Let's start with this one. It's kind of a two-part question. I'll start with the simple part. Can you still dunk it?
I hesitate because I haven't tried in about a year. And I did. At that point, I could. It wasn't pretty. But I really haven't done much. I had my knees operated on, not replaced, but just both scoped about two and a half years ago. And I really haven't since then. I really haven't done much. So can I? Tell you what, you and me will go in the back gym and we'll test it a couple times. If I can do it, we'll prove it. If I can't, then we just won't ask the question again.
Because the next question was, can we see video proof either way?
Hey, can we just do like, you know, some photos or something like that? Yeah, probably not.
I assure you, the University of South Dakota Athletics Department has a very talented videographer that would love to capture this.
Which I think it's funny, because I wonder if that's where the question came from.
How about when we get into games? I think this was in regards to basketball, but I suppose it could be for any sport. How are officials chosen for games? Is it school? Is it the conference? Is it the NCAA? How are officials assigned games?
Well, for us, and literally most conferences, we're a part of a scheduling consortium. And so the pool of officials that are chosen from also officiate, they officiate the Summit League, the Missouri Valley, the Big Ten, and I think the MAC. And the conference works with the scheduling consortium to assign the officials for all of those games. So the regular season, even non-Summit League games, the Summit League and this consortium assigns all officials. When we get to the Summit League tournament, the Summit League, again, assigns those officials based on, and they take from the pool of officials over the course of the year that have the best rankings, evaluations, if you will. And those rankings and evaluations come from not only the supervisor of officials, but input from coaches. Once you get to the NCAA tournament, those are all assigned by the NCAA.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but with the video capabilities in today's world, officials are pretty much graded about every game, aren't they, throughout the year?
Yeah, I do believe so. It used to be we had a supervisor, evaluator of officials that would basically come to games. They wouldn't come to every game, but they would probably be at over half, a half to three quarters of our home games. And that's kind of how you had that evaluation. Now it's pretty easy because all of our games are uploaded and the conference and the officials or the assigner of officials, coordinator of officials has access to that.
The Summit League Volleyball Tournament is quickly approaching. April 2nd and 3rd. 2nd is the semifinals and then the championship on the 3rd. Do we know yet how many fans, if any, will be allowed for the volleyball tournament being held at the Pentagon?
I know there will be fans allowed in the building. I don't know exactly how many. The Summit League is going to be making that announcement this week.
When it comes to this summer and looking ahead, will USD have athletic camps this year?
Yes. I would say I'm 90% confident that we will. Part of that is being worked through the NCAA's Division I Council, and we've got to get the recruiting dead period, which right now is set to expire at the end of May, and allow recruiting to open up in whatever format that is starting June 1. Provided we can do that, and I see that as – again, more than likely happening, then we can host camps. So my hope is that in the next couple of weeks, the action taken by the NCAA will be final, and we can open up all of our camps. We've talked to our coaches about the camps to prepare for the camps, schedule the camps, and put in place COVID protocols for the camps. And as soon as we get the green light, then we can promote those camps.
We'll look forward to seeing all of that. Okay, this next one is going to be, it's going to turn into a conversation because we have watched South Dakota and South Dakota State women play in the NCAA tournament. We've seen Oral Roberts go into the NCAA tournament and not only get there but have success. They're all the way to the Sweet 16. A lot of people are wondering how that financially impacts USD and the Summit League with the success of a team like Oral Roberts making their way to the Sweet 16.
All right. We're going to start throwing spaghetti on a wall because that's about as messy as this is. So the Oral Roberts, let's just take Oral Roberts, for example. You know, they qualified, they were our automatic qualifier for the tournament. And they play the first round game. They win the first round game. That's awesome. We get a share. Okay, I'll explain that in a second. They win a second round game. Now the league gets two shares. If Oral Roberts, as an automatic qualifier, had that first game, if they would have lost, we would have had zero shares. And these shares, each conference, now again, for the most part, if I'm thinking about the Summit League, we're probably just talking about one school. If you're in the ACC, you might be talking about the opportunity for seven schools to have a share. If I'm an at-large bid team, just making the NCAA tournament, I get a share. And for every round that I play, a automatic qualifier or at large, you get a share, except for the championship game. No shares allotted for the championship game. Now you're saying, okay, what's a share and what does that mean? Well, each year they kind of base it off of kind of a rolling 6-year average. And so if I look back, and the next question is, what are these shares worth? Okay. Well, back in 2020, they would have been worth roughly $280,000, $285,000 a share. I don't know what it's going to be this year. Primarily, overall revenues are down. The TV revenue is modified, and there's no tickets no ticket sales for this. So the NCAA is probably going to award, they will award less money, but I just don't know what that figure looks like for this year. So if I look at Oral Roberts, and what does that mean for the league? Okay, because when these shares come in, they come into the league, and then the league distributes that equally among all the members. So in our case, so let's say that figure, I'm just going to go round numbers. Let's say the figure this year is $250,000, and that's what each share is worth. Right now, Oral Roberts has generated $500,000, two shares. The way the league does it, for every share that team earns, they get $35,000. So Oral Roberts has won two games, but they earn two shares. They'll get $70,000 right off the top. Okay, so right now we're dealing with $430,000 to distribute among the membership. And then at that point, each member gets, it's all equal shares, and the Summit League office itself gets a split. So right now we're talking about 10 shares because we have 9 members and the Summit League office, and then it's distributed. We can look back at previous years where it might be like back in 2016 when NVSU won a game, and back then, your automatic qualifier, you got a share even if you were an automatic qualifier. But they were an automatic qualifier and they won a game. So we had two shares. And then you take that over the course of 6 years, average that out to your number of shares, and that's the split that the conference gets.
So when it comes to shares, are there shares in all sports for the championships? Are we talking about, obviously men's basketball comes to light when it comes to this, but how is football playoffs impacted, or women's basketball NCAA tournament, or sure, volleyball for that matter? How does all that play into this?
Men's basketball is the only sport where there's a revenue distribution from the tournament. It's not in football. Well, we're talking FCS football, right? Because we have rounds that you get into, but there's no revenue distribution. Now the college football playoff is different. That's FBS football. I don't know exactly what that is, but there's no revenue distribution share for women's basketball, for volleyball, for hockey, for baseball, for any of the other sports.
So how about this now? We've got, and USD experienced this not too long ago, and obviously you were a part of the athletics department during the transition. St. Thomas is coming into the league. How do the shares affect new members into the league, or that revenue sharing, or does that all have to wait until they get through a process?
That I don't know the answer to, how it affects and when new members have access to that additional share. I don't know the answer to that one. I would imagine it would be a couple years, or it's when they're a full qualifier. So I don't know.
So what you're telling us, though, regardless, is anytime teams from our league are in the NCAA tournament, for men's basketball especially, cheer for them to go all the way.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Now, I realize some members might be tougher to cheer for than others. But you know what? It's good for the league. And it's good for the league. And it's great that, these questions are coming up because we're generally interested. People think there's just, millions and millions of dollars flowing back to us. And it is and it isn't, because there's a great deal of additional money that comes from the NCAA tournament, the men's basketball tournament, that gets funneled back to schools in different pods of money with different formulas associated with it. It's the academic enhancement money. It might be the student assistance fund. There's several ways that we get revenue distributions from the NCAA. So certainly not having the tournament last year, that's why all of us took a pretty sizable hit when the NCAA was not able to distribute revenue. And in this year, we're also looking at a reduced revenue distribution just because of the nature of the NCAA tournament. And it's really critical for the money to get distributed that as much of the 67 games, because I think you got the play-in games as well, that those get played. If the tournament, let's say, got canceled tomorrow, again, there would be another significant hit by the NCAA, and then ultimately there would hinder their ability to distribute money back to schools.
Well, it's an interesting it's an interesting deal, and certainly appreciate your thoughts and comments on the whole thing. I know it's can be kind of a mess, but I think we made our way through it. So
I just hope I didn't confuse anybody more than I answered questions, because I'm sitting there going, I mean, there's probably, I might know 75% of it. And like a little question like, well, what do you do with St. Thomas? Because here's the deal. Let's say IUPUI leaves, or when IUPUI left the league. And let's say at somewhere down the line, they had earned two or three shares by their advancement to the NCAA tournament. Well, now they go to the Horizon League. They don't take those shares with them to the Horizon League. Those shares stay in the Summit League. So it's such a, every year I still have to ask questions and read up on it to make sure I'm actually understanding it right, and that they didn't make another change that I missed.
Well, it's certainly interesting, no doubt about that. David, really appreciate the time and the conversation. I know we got into a lot today, but I greatly appreciate it as always. And keep up the great work, and keep us in line with all of this stuff and how it all falls in line. Thanks so much for the time.
Thanks, John. Appreciate you, man.
That's David Herbster, the athletic director at the University of South Dakota. Okay, Yotes fans, let's bank some noise. First Dakota National Bank is here to help you reach all of your financial goals. Bank some noise with First Dakota at firstdakota.com. Member FDIC. This week, we had a chance to catch up with freshman golfer Danica Berduras, coming off of her best career finish at the University of South Dakota, and as a collegiate golfer, finishing with a top 10 performance down in Texas. Danica, as you've been able to get off to a start in your collegiate golf career, a freshman at the University of South Dakota, what has been something that maybe has stood out to you that's just different in college golf?
I think just the amount of time that we put in as a team has really just been an adjustment for me, but it's been good. It's definitely been beneficial for my game. I feel like I've really improved on my weak spots in my game, and which is something that I never really did a lot of a couple years ago. But like coming into this team environment has just been really, really good for me to just learn more about myself and my game and my teammates. And it's been really fun to work together as a team.
You've had a great deal of success in golf, even prior to your time at the University of South Dakota as a high school golfer, a state championship, a couple of runner-up individual finishes. When you look back at your high school career, Aurora, Nebraska, what do you reflect on the most during your time golfing in high school?
Yeah, I'm just really grateful to have represented such an amazing community and school system there in Aurora. They take a lot of pride in the values and who they are, and the community support is just something that is truly unmatched there. And that's something that I believe contributed to a lot of my success. And the people are just really what makes this game so amazing and worth it. So yeah, like the success and all the awards and accolades are nice, but just still receiving that support even today from the community members in Aurora is what it's really all about.
You know, you mentioned awards and accolades. You were Nebraska Golf Association Girls Golfer of the Year, Women's Amateur Golf Association Golfer of the Year. I mean, when you get your name put on something that says Golfer of the Year, what does that mean to you?
It's so humbling. Just every time I kind of reflect on that, I'm just so grateful for all the opportunities that the Nebraska Golf Association provides for me. But not only that, just more importantly, my family, the way that they invest their time into just allowing me to chase my dream. And they really contribute to a lot of my success in that it's just, it's really all about the people. Like I said, they're the ones, they're the reason I do what I do. So that just really makes it special to play the game I love.
Golf isn't a game that people just pick up without being introduced to it. What got you into golf, or do you remember even? Some people do it at a very, very young age. Do you even remember what got you involved in golf?
I grew up on a golf course, Centaur Hills in Caro, Nebraska. So we lived there up until I was about 8 or 9 years old, and then we moved to Aurora. But kind of growing up on the golf course, I always had a club in my hands. Ever since I can remember, I was pretty much swinging a club. But also, ever since I can remember, I just really did not like golf. And my parents just still, and my brother even too, he just really encouraged me to stick with the game, because they just all told me how much potential I had, and how far that it could take me, honestly. But yeah, at first I just wasn't a fan of it. But the family support really can help move me along the right paths.
Now, when you start getting involved in golf, and obviously you would have found out at a fairly good age that you had some ability in the sport, when did you know that golf was something that you really wanted to pursue in high school and perhaps beyond?
I would say the summer before my eighth grade year is just kind of when I just really realized my potential in the sport. And I think just having conversations with my dad, he basically told me that I could receive a scholarship to play college golf, which is just incredible, playing college golf and also receiving an education. So that just really intrigued me and caught my interest. So I think just the step before, right before high school is when it kind of all took off. And then it's just my love for the game has just grown ever since.
You get the opportunity to come to college, and during that time in your transition, we're involved in a pandemic. And golf is a different sport than some of the other team sports where, you know, you can still socially distance and play the game throughout the course of the summer and the fall and all of that stuff. How did the pandemic, if at all, how did it affect your transition to college and just your ability to continue to work on your golf game?
It was definitely really tough because obviously I competed all summer and was able to get those experiences on the course. And then I get to USD for the first time, and a couple days later, coach announces to the team that we wouldn't be having a season, which was just kind of a shocker to me since I'd been competing all season. And now I wouldn't be able to compete essentially till the spring, which is right now. And it was especially tough because I saw that some other conferences and schools across the nation were competing. So I think just like the comparison set in a little bit, like, oh, like why are we not competing? But I think just reflecting on that whole experience in the fall, it just really allowed me to grow as a person, especially just mentally with my game. I kind of struggled a bit on the course, but I just really worked on my weak spots, and which is something that I may not have gotten to do if we were competing. So it was kind of a blessing in disguise.
The HBU Intercollegiate will always be something that stands out to you. Earlier this month, and you finished in a tied for seventh place, the best finish by a Coyote golfer this season, finishing as a top 10 as a freshman. What did that event mean to you?
It was really good to just finally put three pretty solid rounds together. I know that I've just kind of struggled with that. And the previous past two events this spring. But I think that for me, it was just mentally staying in it because those 36 whole days do get really long. And that's kind of where I struggle, just like on the 30th hole, then I kind of just falter off. But I feel like I remained pretty strong, and then I was able to kind of bounce back the second day after a rough start and just kind of grind it out, which is really what golf is all about, especially college golf.
Yeah, you mentioned grind it out. How different is competition golf versus just a round on the golf course?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just a super competitive person, so I'm always trying to obviously do my best, compete, get a PR or whatever, but just, I feel like competition just kind of brings out a whole nother level of me, just mentally. I feel like I really like pressure situations. Those are kind of something that I've learned to love the past couple years or so with all my success. But yeah, it's definitely kind of adjustment from just playing around like with family or friends versus competition. But you kind of have to have a good mindset in both in order to succeed.
Danica, what's the strength of your game?
I would say that consistency overall is kind of my strength. I don't know if there's really one part of my game that necessarily stands out above the rest, but as a whole, I feel like I'm pretty consistent and I can contribute that to just the mental side of the game.
Competitive people often know where their weaknesses are a little bit more. Where's an area that you've continued to work on and try to get better to continue your success at this level?
I think just my wedges is something that I've really kind of noticed coming to college. I just need to be more kind of like diverse in the way that I approach some shots. Before coming to college, I would typically just have a yardage and I'd stick to just one club for that yardage. But coach has kind of taught me that it's okay to hit multiple, have multiple different clubs to be able to hit for one yardage. So I feel like the kind of just like the diversity within the wedge game is something that I'm really working on right now.
Yeah, I think wedges, there's something we all struggle with. That's a hard part of the game, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But once you kind of stick those close and then you just really like that feeling, so you just kind of keep wanting to work on it and just improve on it.
What are you looking forward to the rest of your season and as you continue to build in your career at USD?
Yeah, it's crazy that we're already halfway done with our season. My freshman year was almost done, which is kind of crazy to think about. But I think for the remainder of the spring, we're just really going to focus on coming together as a team, all nine of us, and then that'll really help translate over to our success on the golf course. But kind of regarding my, the rest of my career here at USD, I think just like keeping the main things, you know, like, yes, the success is amazing and it feels great, but the relationships are really the things that last. And those are just kind of the things that I really want to focus on here in my next 3 years.
We look forward to seeing your career continue and your career unfold at USD. Danica, thanks so much for your time. Greatly appreciate it. Good luck the rest of the season.
Thank you. And thank you so much for having me.
That's Danica Badura. She is a freshman golfer for the University of South Dakota. For the past decade, there's only been one place to watch your favorite coaches, players, and teams, and that place is Midco Sports Network, celebrating 10 years of sports this season. Well, before we wrap things up, let's take a look at what is going on in Coyote Athletics coming up here over the course of the next few days and the next week until we talk again. The Coyote track and field team will head to three different locations. They'll split up their team. There'll be a couple of days. There'll be a team at San Marcos, Texas at the Bobcat Invitational, Austin, Texas at the Clyde Littlefield, Texas Relays. And then starting on, I believe it's Friday, the track and field team will have some members at the Wildcat Classic in Wayne, Nebraska as well. So they'll have we'll have tracksters all over the place here in the weekend to really get the outdoor season going. Swimming and Diving Invitational is set for the Sioux Falls Aquatic Center, the Midco Aquatic Center. That is coming up over the weekend as well. Women's Tennis will take on Creighton. That's a home match scheduled for Friday afternoon. And soccer is at home this week as they take on Oral Roberts on a Friday and Sunday. Volleyball is on the road. They are at Western Illinois to wrap up the regular season, preparing themselves for next weekend's Summit League Volleyball Tournament. So we'll see how things go there. Softball team is down in Texas, Austin, Texas. They're in a tournament down there, so playing multiple games and multiple teams over the next few days. And football is home this weekend. They'll take on North Dakota State Saturday at 1 o'clock. You can hear that game on the Coyote Sports Network. You can also watch it. It is available on Midco SN. So check that out, and we'll see how things go for the Coyote football team looking for a big win over the Bison. Coming up on Monday and Tuesday, women's golf is in Kirkwood, Missouri at the Diane Doherty Invitational. So we'll see how they can do on Monday and Tuesday. Women's golf back in action. That's what's going on in Coyote Athletics, and that is going to do it for me today. My thanks to you for taking the time to listen to this. Download and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. These are always available at goyotes.com/yotecast as well. But if you download and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, you won't never miss the latest episode of Yodcast. So check it out. Give us a rating. Give us a comment. We'd love to hear from you. If you'd ever have any thoughts or know a storyline that you'd like to hear more about that involves Coyote Athletics, you'd like to hear on the podcast, send us an email at yodcast@usd.edu. That's it for me today. I'm John Thayer. Thanks so much for taking the time to listen. And until next time, stay healthy and go Yotes.
Thanks for listening to Yotecast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Coyote Sports Network.